Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today we're going to turn our attention to an important development that's pending, a decision by the Supreme Court of the United States. The latest in a long line in recent years of legal attacks on unions. A little background here, and then I'll introduce my guest. Well, the background is that the attacks on unions have been going on for almost 40 years now. In the private sector, meaning not public employees, it's been quite successful. In 1980, the union movement represented about 22% of the labor force, and in certain industries, 60-70%, you know, manufacturing, construction, communications, and so forth. But that's been totally undermined in a series of strategies and tactics employed from Reagan to Trump, right through the Democratic Party, of course, years in the White House and in Congress. The attack has gone on. So both parties, or both wings of the corporate party of America, are complicit in this. How did they destroy the union membership in the private sector? Well, the main thrust was offshoring of jobs, you see, globalization, and tax incentives to get businesses to move offshore. You gut the union membership or just in worker ranks, total employment in these industries, and soften people up, and then it's easy to attack them. It's a complicated set of strategies and tactics, but they reduced the membership to barely 6% now, from 22% and in some cases 70-80% to 6%, or a little above 6%. Unions in the private sector are barely hanging on. I'm not going to go into all the details of how they've done it. It's a long story. I've written about it before, and I'll write about it again. But now, the attack in recent years, in the last decade, has shifted to the public sector, public workers. You see, it's hard to offshore public jobs. Not as easy. So they have to come up with another strategy on how to do that. Public workers have been able to keep their ranks membership 35%. In other words, they haven't declined. In some cases, they've expanded. It's pretty difficult to offshore public sector jobs, teacher jobs, and so forth. And they've decided to go after the public sector about a decade ago and developed a series of strategies to do that. We're going to talk about one of those strategies here today and legal approaches associated with it and who's behind it. But we have a guest who is really going to tell us the union position and role on what does this mean. The decision in front of the Supreme Court for hearing already held, and now they're going to have a decision. It's called the Janus decision, J-A-N-U-S, versus American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, one of the big public employee unions. Well, the other big public employee union guest is from the Service Employees International Union here today, and he's Joe. His name is Joe, and he is vice president of SEIU Local 1021 in San Francisco. And we're lucky to have him on to tell us, labor's interpretation of what's going on, because this isn't just a legal decision. This is part of a offensive being funded by right wing and billionaires. And this has been going on for some time. It's targeting the the teachers union, but it's going to impact all public employees. And it's the new offensive. They've been attacking public employees' bargaining for a decade now, and in particular to pensions. And now, of course, it's attacking the union itself and union membership, because in a nutshell, this Janus decision is a decision that says teachers, affects the teachers' union, don't have to pay union dues. In other words, let's implement what's called the open shop movement. Open shop is a term that says you can share the benefits of the union bargaining for you, the wages and benefits and so forth, but you don't have to pay union dues, you see. So you're going to have a lot of people who are freeloaders, particularly in certain parts of the country where the union consciousness is not very great, taking what the union delivers for them and not paying their fair share for the expenses of collective bargaining and so forth. Well, this is a serious move because it will debilitate union funds and the ability of unions to be able to properly even represent their people. That lack or difficulty of representation will result in poor contracts, probably in many cases, not all. The poor contracts, people will drop out of the union altogether. It has to do with what's called agency fees, you see. And a decision decades ago, Supreme Court in a different era ruled that, okay, so you don't want to join the union and pay union dues, but you have to pay agency dues. In other words, unions representing you and you're benefiting, because the union has to represent everybody, whether they're in the union or not, you see. That's the law. So agency fees means you pay your fair share. Well, they're in the Janus decision, they're saying you don't have to pay anything. You don't have to pay your fair share. In other words, it's an open shop in the public sector. The open shop in the private sector has been accelerating just in few years, last few years. Open shop meaning you don't have to join a union or pay dues. That's been accelerating. About half a dozen new states have passed open shop laws, and big offensive continuing there, funded by a lot of big corporate money and billionaires. And now it's spilling over with the Janus decision to the public sector. Well, was my guest on?
Yes, Dr.
Okay.
Rasmus, this is Joseph here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Joe. As I said, Joe is vice president. Joe, I've forgotten your last name. Would you just for the
Bryant.
f folks tell them who you are?
My name is Joseph Bryant. I am the regional vice president of San Francisco for SEIU 10 to 1. I'm also a employee of the city and county of San Francisco, an employment and training specialist.
Great, great. Glad to have you on. Thanks for coming on here. Well, Joe, I'm gonna, that was my intro to put our interview and show here in context. The context being the 30 plus years attack on private sector unions had been successful relatively, and now, of course, they're going after the public sector, the last bastion of unionization in this country. At a time, by the way, folks, when wages have not increased for at least 15 years, adjusted for inflation, median weekly earnings for working folks have been stagnant or worse for all this time. And so it's not about the cost of rising wages and unions and workers with unions are getting too expensive. In fact, quite the opposite. Their spendable income and benefits have been in decline. So what is it? What's behind this? Why are they so adamant? And I guess the best question, Joe, is who's behind this?
Yeah, so who's behind this is really the folks who are the ultra wealthy, the 1%, the Koch brothers, the National Foundation for Right to Work, is a group that's closely aligned with ALEC, the American Exchange Legislative Committee. And really what they've tried to do, as you've outlined really well, is attack the working class, and attack the working class by by pushing legislation like this, by pushing other attacks like this to really further the gap between the have and have-nots, you know, the working class and between the 1%. This is the latest iteration of these attacks, but it is by far not the only. As you mentioned, it's been going on for over 30 years. You know, just from the historical context of what's going on here, you know, this is really an attempt to overturn a previous Supreme Court case decision, which is the Abood versus the Board of Education, which essentially said that everybody who is represented by a union who benefits from, you know, bargaining, collective bargaining, who benefits from representation, who benefits from wage increases, benefits, and pensions that unions fight for, they'll be required to all put in resources to help do this work. In addition to that, unions are, from a previous Supreme Court case, obligated to provide that representation to all employees without discrimination. What Janus is trying to do now is it's really trying to say, as you touched on, Dr. Rasmus, that, you know, folks can benefit from the work that is being done by unions in terms of fighting for, you know, fair wages, you know, benefits and safe working conditions, but not have to contribute to it. And, you know, that's as un-American as it gets.
Yeah, just for the audience, further clarification, you know, a decade or two ago, the attack focused on, well, the union is spending your dues money for political candidates, which you may not support. And that was the focus of the attack on union dues collection. You know, decisions were legal decisions came down that said, okay, you know, if you don't like who the union is supporting politically, then you can have your dues, your agency fees or dues, reduced to the extent that the union spends on political action. So it's not really a case anymore that the union spending on somebody you don't want to support. Your agency fees and union dues are reducible by that amount of spending by the union. Now it's a total. They got a bite of the apple there, and so now they're going after the whole thing. You know, if you want to destroy something, you take away the financing, the funding for it. You know, it's just like the attacks going on Social Security and Medicare. You know, they focus on, as the right wing says, starve the beast, create huge deficits. And that for there, then you can say, oh, it's failing, and then you can take it apart. We see that happening now, you know, with this multi-trillion dollar Trump tax cuts here. And the trillion-dollar defense spending hikes, which are going to create trillion-dollar deficits every year for as far as we can see. And they're going to use that and already started using that to attack Social Security and Medicare, saying, oh, it's that, the fault of Social Security and Medicare, which isn't true. But that's the excuse to take it apart. Well, they're doing the same thing here with the union, you know. Let's undermine the ability to represent the workers. And then when the unions have problems in that regard, we can say, oh, the unions, you know, you don't want a union, and then get rid of the union. So this is part of a bigger strategy of deunionization. We can weaken it and then attack it. You know, that's what they did in the private sector. Now they're going to do it and are doing it here in the public sector. Attack the dues base. Right. And there's decisions, right, by the way, also developing in Texas and so forth, which are actually saying that the union won't be able to check off the dues. Even those who want to pay dues, who want to pay the agency fees, right, or want to pay and join the union and pay the fees. Now there's a decision coming behind Janus that says, oh, that's going to be illegal. So then you're going to have the union people having to run around and collect checks from everybody instead of dues check-off, which is, you know, automatic deduction from your pay. So, you know, just put that in context. That's the next one coming. But right now, it's this SCOTUS decision about Janus. You mentioned something, Joe, about some of the background here. I've been doing some research on this. And what's the State Policy Network, SPN? Are you aware of that? It's tied in with you know, the billionaires in Illinois and Chicago. This is a Chicago, Illinois legal suit here. I hear that the SPN is linked with Alec and the Koch brothers, and behind them a group called the Bradley Foundation, and behind them Donors Trust Fund and a whole group of a right winger organizations, you know, like the Cato Institute and et cetera. So this is big funded, $200 million war chest they got to go after this. Any comment on that?
Yeah, sure. And, I mean, from what I've heard in regards to this entity, they've received funding from entities like the Koch brothers, Philip Morris, Kraft, really large special interests, a really conservative, they call it nonprofit organization, even though they've been, pulling in a lot of resources, from these special interests and, the ultra wealthy. And, they've been promoting things like the, attacks on public sector workers, public sector trade union workers. They've also, claimed to, want workplace freedom and education reform. So essentially large promoters of, charter schools and so forth. But, again, it goes back to the false narrative that is being created around this, and you touched on it a bit in talking about how this is being framed as a political issue and political affiliation. And again, that's not the case. Even though the unions are obligated to represent anyone within a bargaining unit, those employees aren't required to be members and pay the full dues. They're required at this point in time to pay fair share dues. And with those fair share dues, none of those resources are used towards political or organizing activities. So you do it, it's really just used for, fighting for wages, working conditions, and benefits, healthcare, retirement, and so forth. So, they've tried to groups like this and Alec and others have tried to frame it in a way that makes it seem as if you're being forced to do something when the reality is you're not. The reality is, as the working class, we know that we're stronger together in the sense that, if every individual was on their own to try to negotiate, a raise or their health care package or their benefits, it'd be an uphill battle. And we know that the only chance that we have to stand up and uplift a whole group is through doing it together. And the heart of what this is, and as you mentioned, other attempts like eliminating dues checkoffs, is to divide. It's to attempt to create different classes within the ranks so that it just weakens our collective power.
For the listeners, let me clarify a little bit more. You may not understand agency shop, union shop, and maybe you've heard the term closed shop, right? Well, closed shop doesn't exist anymore.
Correct.
Closed shop is a union hiring hall. Union hiring hall, like in the longshore, dock workers, the union gets you your job, right? Powerful source of solidarity. The union hiring hall. Well, they outlawed that, in 1947 for any new unions. So that's not an issue. They took that apart, and then they went after the union shop, which simply means if you have that in your contract within 30 days, you've got to join the union and pay dues. Well, the alternative to that was the agency shop, where we're talking about now in this Janus case, in which you don't have to join a union, but you got to pay your fair share. minus if you don't like the political part of your dues being used by the union, you don't have to pay that. So they've been chipping away, and now they want to eliminate it altogether. And then the next step is even for those who want to pay union dues or agency fees, well, you're going to have to pay it by writing a check, and the union's going to have to go pick it up. I was in a union years and years ago, decades ago. I'm not going to mention which one, but it was one where the union had to go around and collect dues from multiple locations. And I'll tell you, the union representatives, you know, to keep the union even alive and going, they spent most of their time going around trying to find people to pay their dues. It was a total waste. All that effort could have been used preparing for bargaining and preparing for arbitration cases and so forth. So it's a big blow. It's a big blow if you take away dues check off. But right now, even if you take away the agency shop, big blow to unions, public unions. It's softening them up for the next effort in the destruction, the plan to destroy unions here going on. I would suggest readers. There's an excellent article in a magazine called In These Times, March of this year. Google it, check it out. It shows the donors, that we're talking about here, these big billionaires and their institutions and foundations and so forth that have been behind this, and how they're behind all the right to work and all the dues check off elimination and, all the cases here attacking public workers. This is an organized capitalist class offensive. Now, this isn't a fly-by-night thing where someone individual doesn't want to pay dues or something like that. This is really big money behind it, big money behind it. And it has nothing to do with the cost of union wages and benefits, nothing at all. This is strictly ideological going on. What's your union doing about it, Joe?
We're doing a lot of work to let folks know where this is coming from, who's funding it. It's history. I mean, the history of right to work is a whole story in itself. Going back to the who's perceived as the mastermind or creator in some ways of right to work, a gentleman named Vance Muse, who was a Texas lobbyist. Businessmen.
By the way, let me interject here for the audience. Right to work is a euphemism, a phony term, which means you don't have to join the union. The union
That's
will
correct.
Negotiate for you, but you don't have to join it. Right to work. It's really right to work for less. But they use that phrase, right to work, to appeal to people. But it has nothing to do with the right to work. Go ahead, Joe.
That is absolutely correct. Thank you for the clarification. A better term that we're using for it is now, as what you touched on, is open shop. Really, the moniker that they use of right to work is what we're calling a Trojan horse. I mean, it's something that sounds good, but the impacts of it are going to be detrimental to the working class. But going back to Mr. Muse, and I feel as if there needs to be more in just talking about who he was, what he was about, again, being the mastermind around this right to work open shop effort. He was a Texas businessman, also white supremacist, also anti-Semite, also very much anti-union, and he fought vigorously to try to have right to work become law in many states. And it really stemmed from Jim Crow South areas. He was so upset of the work that the unions, AFL-CIO at that time, was doing in regards to ending segregation. So this was the perfect storm for him, and he was the perfect character in regards to, you know, really trying to move this agenda forward. And just, you know, the past of right to work is really disgusting, really comes from, you know, the greedy corporate, but also, you know, racist and views of segregation. And, you know, it's been picked up today by, you know, the ultra wealthy, whose goals are clear, we feel. I mean, the goals of the ultra wealthy are what they have been for the last 40 plus years, and that's continue to increase their bottom line, to continue to increase their profits. And the way they're able to do so is by cut the cost in labor, cut the cost in people. The lease that they have to put out for the working folks who allow their companies to run, the more money that they make. And that's really what it comes down to at the end of it. You know, and this was not, you know, this is not, you know, something that, as you talked about, is just kind of a, you know, idea overnight. This has been in the works for 70 years, the first right to work states, Florida and Texas, 1944, in 1961, even, you know, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Was doing his work with the civil rights movement alongside of the work of the labor rights movement, he spoke directly on this. He said, you know, in our glorious fight for civil rights, we must guard against being fooled by false slogans such as right to work. So this was in 1961. The efforts have not ceased to continue to try to move this agenda to weaken the power of the working class. I mean, the system has already been rigged so much, and this is just another attempt to continue to rig it. And as you touched on, you know, this is one of many things that they're trying to do right now, to try to, you know, weaken the power of the working class.
Yeah, and there appears to be a dual strategy here on the part of these right-to-workers in the private sector. The majority of the states now are right-to-work. In other words, you can't even negotiate a union shop. You can only negotiate an agency shop, right? That's what right-to-work means. You know, the offensive there is to spread right-to-work, you know, eliminate the union shop idea. Everyone has to join a union in the contract. Eliminate that all together in all 50 states, right? And they're well on their way. The strategy in the public sector, on the public employee side, seems to be this right now focused on this Janus thing where, okay, you don't have to pay agency fees even. Let's get rid of that. And then the next step, as we said, is let's get rid of dues checkoff. So it's like a well-organized, funded, financed, healed effort, sophisticated effort on, you know, a different emphasis on the private sector, different emphasis on the public sector going forward in general. You know, you mentioned the right to work movement, national right to work movement of employers and wealthy folks. They put in $1.2 million in this Janus fund, this legal fund. And it goes from there. Whole list of multi-million dollar organization donors to fund this legal Janus decision that finally got to the Supreme Court now. And we'll see what the Supreme Court says here pretty soon, I think. But I'm not too optimistic. What's the assessment of your union? How do you think this thing's going to come down?
Sure. You know, and this is the third attempt at the Supreme Court level that this has come up as specific in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, first with the governor of Illinois, who tried to bring the case up, and it was, you know, struck down because they said he wasn't an impact the party, or they pushed it back to lower courts. Then there was another attempt to do this with, which was called the Friedrichs case in 2016. So Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association. At that point in time, actually, the expectation was that, you know, this would be the law of the land, that the Supreme Court was going to make a ruling on it. It seemed pretty clear that the Supreme Court was lined up to make a 5-4 ruling against the previous Abood case, but during arguments or during deliberation, Justice Antonio Scalia passed away, and it went to a 4-4 tie, and it, you know, referenced a status quo position. And so now, in this current climate, with the addition of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, the expectation,
lawyer, by the way.
Right.
Right.
I mean, the expectation is that the decision will be made. We don't know the full scope of it, but done so with the overturning of the previous Abood court case decision. So our approach is to expect the worst. We think there's a, you know, high probability for the worst coming out of this in terms of the Supreme Court's decision. So, you know, it's really important on us and the work that we do, you know, just to educate our members, to educate our workers of, you know, what the union is, you know, what the union has been, what the union does now, what the union continues to do. It's really a very important role that we have to take. We have to remind folks that, you know, the unions have been, as you mentioned, the last bastion to, you know, continue to fight for the working class, for the middle class, which has been under constant assault since the 70s. Also, you know, unions, I mean, some of these things are taken for granted, forgotten to some degree, but unions, you know, help bring the 8-hour working day and the, you know, the 40-hour week, because before Americans were working over 60 hours a week, and usually over a 6-day period. You know, unions have helped establish, you know, child labor laws, helped create unemployment insurance as a safety net for folks, and continues the fight for fair wages, you know, health care coverage for all. And, you know, some of these things are forgotten, and why it's forgotten is because it's been intentional in the fact that, you know, unions are framed in a way that's not accurate in terms of what they do. Part of what we need to do, and we have been doing as a union, is to educate folks, letting folks know that there's a deep, rich history that is the labor movement, you know, that, you know, similar to the civil rights movement, you know, thousands of people have given their lives for these benefits that we enjoy that, you know, to some degree we take for granted now, and that history cannot be lost. That history provides the context of understanding the importance of unions. And still today, you know, over 60 million people live below the poverty line and have, you know, insecurity of whether they'll be able to put food on their table or not at night. That does not sound like a society or country where unions are no longer needed. If anything, especially with all the challenges that we're facing, unions are needed even more so now. And without unions, who is going to stand up against the Koch brothers? Who's going to stand up against special interests? Who has the collective resources to take on this work? There aren't any other entities, and that's why they've been putting so much effort and attention into, you know, this particular case and in its attempts to, you know, really undermine the strength and the resources of the unions.
Well, you know, you listed the things that the union has done, unions have done over the decades, often taken for granted because people don't know the origins. One you left out, and I would add, is that pensions, right?
Right.
There would be no pensions in this country. You know, that was begun by the mine workers in World War II, and then it spread after the Second World War throughout the private sector. And today, the public sector is the only sector that has real, true pensions. You know, I'm not talking about this phony 401k stuff where the bankers get hold of it and invest it, and the stock market crashes, and you lose everything like we did after 2008, $4 trillion lost. I'm talking about real pensions, what we call defined benefit pensions, where you get guaranteed for the rest of your life so much money per month, given your so many years in service. The public sector is the last sector that has that. I know, because my wife is a teacher. She's a high school teacher, and it's a wonderful pension plan. And they've destroyed that in the private sector, gotten rid of it, replaced it with these 401ks. But you know, it really aggravates the billionaires and the right wingers that it's still decent pensions still exist in the public sector, and that's what one of the reasons they want to go after it. They want to get rid of that that example. You know, back in 2011. When the public workers, you know, rose up there in Wisconsin, they did so because the governor there, another right-wing governor, Walker, what he wanted to do was to take the right to negotiate pensions out of the hands of the union, and in other words, chop up collective bargaining. That's the next thing, you know, saying that you can't do this or that in negotiating and go back to the civil service. Arrangement where workers really had no say because it was individual. Well, I just would like to add that thing about pensions here, that that's a real target of all this as well, not just, you know, you weaken the
Absolutely.
union so they can't keep their pensions is what they want to do in the long run, I think. Hey, if this decision comes down, what's SEIU going to do with the other public workers' unions? Obviously, this is, you know, targeting the teachers, but it's all public workers that are at risk here. You know, what are your plans to get together here with all the other public workers, which include firefighters and, you know, other public sector first responders and everything? You know, what are you going to do here to get the attention?
Sure, and thanks for bringing that up. So, just earlier this week on Monday, as the hearing for Janus versus AFSCME started, we actually called a big rally at City Hall, which was inclusive of a number of the other public sector unions. But you'd be surprised that many of the other private sector unions are just as supportive. We have many community groups. We had hundreds and hundreds of folks there, also supported by, just about all the elected officials here in San Francisco, because it does have to be, done as a collective. The fight against these efforts can't be, just one local or one organization trying to do it on its own. It really must be, and that goes with the spirit. It must be an effort, a united front of organized labor. So we are doing that work and working with other public sector workers. We're working with other private sector, excuse me, public sector unions, private sector unions, also community groups, because, the impacts that we see with the work that the union does do not just fall within the realm of just helping those union members. It's really about, fighting for working class, moving up the entire threshold or barometer in regards to when we are able to, pick up, it picks up everyone. And an example of that, and the benefits that the community or that are brought to the community are things like when, workers are able to come together, and have strengths, they can bring benefits like one of the things that we did here in San Francisco and California is help create patient to nurse ratios, which you would think is something that would be logical. A nurse can't cover 100 people. That would just, be impossible for that nurse to be able to cover and also not safe for any particular patient. So, we're able to through the work of the union and being a collective, able to push and fight for those staffing ratios, which really helps the broader community. So, our efforts to organize must be broad, and not just necessarily even within other unions. It must be broader. It must be about the working class itself, coming together.
Let me ask you this: is there any thought or research into, okay, let's assume that the Supreme Court does this. Could this be offset, the effects of this, on a statewide level? In other words, could California pass a law that requires agency fees, even though we have this Supreme Court decision? Or does the supremacy clause of the U.S. Constitution sort of, you know, negate that kind of state level effort?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, we're exploring everything that we can do to make sure that we're prepared, whether legislatively on a local level, statewide level. But I mean, generally, what we're hearing that the Supreme Court decision will trump any, you know, local or state efforts. But it doesn't mean that we are not trying to explore those. Actually, there's a resolution introduced by one of the supervisors here in San Francisco, Hillary Ronan, which is to, you know, really direct the mayor and the city to, you know, best support as much as possible organized labor due to these threats that we're facing with Janus versus AFSCME.
Yeah, I'm wondering if whether a city could pass some sort of a tax to pay for the full funding of collective bargaining and grievance processing or something. I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Yeah, you know, you wouldn't call it an agency fee, but the union and both sides could actually share in that fund. Of course, you know, you would have the tax politics implications to it, but I don't know, just thinking, you know, something that's similar to, you know, this Trump tax bill really put a lid on, for example, what kind of tax deductions you could get at the state level. So instead of calling it a tax deduction at the state level, they come up with a different, you know, contribution to the state kind of a thing. You know, is there a workaround legally here? Or are you guys exploring that? And I'm not suggesting that's the solution. You know, I think the only solution is to replicate what happened in Wisconsin in 2011, where the public unions rank and file membership, you know, just en masse went and sat in the legislature and wouldn't leave. And I'll tell you, at that time, it was beginning to generate widespread support from across the country. And I know people who were planning to go to Wisconsin and join them. Of course, the whole thing was maneuvered and the plug was pulled before it could actually lead to a, you know, a larger mass demonstration in Wisconsin. But I don't know. Are anybody even talking about that? You know, let's do a mass protest sit-in. You know, not just stand on the street corner in front of the federal building in San Francisco, but something a little more attention-getting and publicity-getting.
Yeah, and you know, we have a on our side, we have a great communications team that's you know, really working on thinking about how we can get as much attention on this matter as possible and allow folks to really know what the impacts are going to be in regards to it. You know, we expect this group called the Freedom Foundation, who's also supported and funded by, you know, Koch brothers and the likes of them to, you know, come out after the Supreme Court decision on Janus's rule to say, hey, you know, give yourself a raise and, you know, drop out of the union. And what we have to make sure that we do is, again, educate folks to know that, you know, who's doing this. When has the Koch brothers ever gave any care about, you know, a working individual and the, you know, the needs of working individuals? So, yes, I mean, I think we still have work to do. We've been meeting with members on a regular basis, you know, going out to the work sites, going out to the different departments, going out to the different chapters, talking to them. So when this comes, they are ready, they are prepared. The next step, you know, really could be, you know, taking it to the next level. And this was the rally that we had earlier this week, you know, was just a part of a bigger strategy to make sure that the public is aware, to make sure that, you know, union members are aware. So we anticipate doing more and larger actions in the future to ensure that the attention on this subject is received as it should be.
Well, that's good to hear that you're thinking, you know, beyond just pickets on the street corner. You know, the thought comes to me here, what, you know, this country is in deep trouble here, and we see the decline of the quality of life all along the board here in various ways. And we see movements, social movements beginning to erupt, you know, like the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. Black Lives, the Florida students against the NRA, right? The fight for 15 right. minimum wage, the immigrant sanctuary and DACA and so forth. But as I've said many times on the show, it's everyone goes and does it on their own. You know, mm-hmm. all these movements aren't coming together. It would seem to me that if you can get this resistance from the public workers here, they could take a lead and maybe try to aggregate somehow these movements. You know, you could just imagine if you had a movement and some sort of organization and protests where all representatives and ranks from all these different groups got together and did it all at once, you know, I'll bet you that scared the pants off of some people.
I mean, you're right. I mean, there is, this country's so ripe, and, you know, I was reading an article this morning, I still fall in the category of being a millennial born in 1982, and with that, I feel as if, you know, growing up, you know, it was a far, you know, different environment. There, the youth at that point in time, or the younger adults at that point in time, seem far less engaged on a broad scale as what you see now in this country, due to, you know, the so many attacks that we're facing, the attacks on, you know, civil rights, the attacks on, you know, our immigrant communities, the attack on women's rights. I mean, these attacks are just all over the place. And, you know, folks that, you know, even I grew up that were never engaged in any types of these activities at any time are looking for a place to go to do this work right now. So I think there is an opportunity. I know, you know, 10 to 1, we've tried to, you know, be engaged in the different movements, the number of the different movements that you laid out. You know, Black Lives Matter, we're part of the lawsuit against the administration in regards to sanctuary cities where we were successful. So, yeah, I mean, if we can find a way to, you know, capture all this emotion, this energy, and really, you know, concentrate it to, you know, where the root problems are, the root, you know, agitators of these issues, it could be something very powerful. And, you know, I think we have to continue to think and strategize and work to getting there, because, you know, no matter, you know, what background you're from, what part of the country you're from, you know, one of those issues that you just laid out touches you. And if we can, you know, pull folks around there and, you know, and not be, you know, divided by the wedge issues that they throw back at us, then we can have, you know, as much power for the working people as possible.
Seems to me that the unions with organization know-how are the best likely focal point for pulling together these different movements in different ways. And I know SEIU in California has been very active in that, as you indicate. But I think you got to get people in the streets, and you got to get them, you know, the leaders of these different movements to agree that we're all going to do this as a joint effort and support each other's programs. And once you get them in the street and people see it, well, you know, it's like going on strike. When everybody's out there, they feel pretty powerful. If no one's out there, well, then, you know, they lose their enthusiasm. I think the unions could pull some of this stuff together if they only would. In some ways, like the building trades, they don't like to go there. SEIU and public workers and some others do. But it seems to me that it's gonna have to be a broader based effort. We can't keep fighting our own little isolated fights. Public workers fighting this fight, Black lives fighting their fight against police repression, and the students against the NRA, and the fight for 15 minimum wage against McDonald's, and the DACA students, fighting for their issue, and women and so forth. It's all isolated, little isolated efforts. The streams got to come together in a big river, and then you got to do something publicly, visibly, whatever that is, so the rest of the people can see, ah, here's an alternative. I think people are ready. I really do. They're just too isolated organizationally from each other. And that is the best defense, I think. Anyway, that's my two cents for the listeners. You heard me say that before, but somehow it's got to all come together here, I think. And the unions are the best likely force with their organization know-how to do it. If they only would, if they only would, And public workers unions like yours. I mean, all these other people are your members too. It's the same thing,
Right.
It's not as if the folks that are in these other efforts and movements aren't also in the public workers unions. They are. Anyway, what do you think of that?
Yeah, no, it's funny that you bring that up because, as much as we've tried to participate as an organization within these different movements that are taking place, we try to organize folks and bring them out. Every time, we go and we're out there in force, we have people come up to say, I'm part of 10 to 1, or I don't know, you guys are going to be here. So, yeah, I mean, you're right in that, these issues that these movements are fighting against, are made up of, people that we represent. As sometimes it can be, challenging trying to bring, all these different ideas and concepts and priorities under one umbrella, but that challenge can't not allow us to try to do it, to be the, the thread that tries to pull these together. I think there can be more to try to really take all this energy, all this force that's out there, and all this emotion that's out there, and try to really, have it come together. And then and again, the impact, I think, can be amazing. And we're seeing some of the results of, these, even though they're not all under the same umbrella at this time, but these different movements and, the last few elections that have taken place over the last, year or so, we're starting to see the impacts of it. I mean, what we've seen in Alabama was, stunning, to say the least. I think there is more work to be done. I think we're willing to take on that work. And yeah, we, are willing to play that role as the thread that, tries to help bring all this energy together.
Yeah, these are real movements that are arising here in the U.S. And I've said before that what you got to do is get the real leaders of real movements to realize that if they fight just for their own issues on their own, they're going to get picked off, which is a long history of that. These isolated movements are easily co-opted and opposed, but if you put them all together, it's much more difficult. So the leaders of real movements have to realize that they got to be part of a bigger stream. They can't be little pawns of resistance here, to use a metaphor. And I think labor, the unions have to take the initiative in approaching these people to pull them together, and to develop a common program of let's restore democracy in this country, for one, right, which is under great attack on all levels, and come up with a an umbrella resistance. You know, that anyway, that's the way I feel about it, and I've been talking about that for some time. You know, the individual movements and individual issues and demands have to come together here. And you know, it's like you know, you want to poke the Koch brothers with a finger, or you want to put it all together in a fist. You know, to use another metaphor. And I think in the process, you got to watch out for what happened in Wisconsin. You know, you had this real movement in Wisconsin, and politicians were able to deflect it into a parliamentary strategy, i.e., let's go elect a new governor. And who did they pick? The guy who got defeated anyway previously by Walker. And, you know, he was a loser to begin with. Why would you support a loser the second time around? You know, that was just a deflection of all the energy and effort. And, you know, once these movements grow, you're going to see that effort to deflect it into, oh, the next election campaign kind of a thing. Well, that's a tried and true strategy for diffusing popular movements as well. But anyway, we'll see what happens here. I hope your union and others, 1021 is pretty progressive compared to some of the others. I hope you take the lead in your significant union in terms of size and influence. First in California, you know, start with California and show the rest of the country of what can be done when groups come together and visibly take on the issue, whether it's you know, let's go to Sacramento and bring a lunch and sit down for a while, you know, after walking, or you know, let's find a location in San Francisco. I don't know. Just thinking off the top of my head here, but something has to be done more aggressively, I think, than just filing legal briefs and so forth, because they got all the resources there. I mean, $45 million alone behind just this one legal Janus decision. I mean, you can't fight.
Yeah, we're not going to beat them at that game.
No, you're not going to beat them at that game at all. But, you know, you can see what attention you get from the media here. You know, when people actually protest publicly and do things publicly, you know, whether it's the students in Florida tired of the NRA killing them, or, you know, whether it's Black Lives or Me Too or the DACA, you know, whatever, that's what gets attention.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we're not going to beat them in the money game. We beat them with the strength that we have is the numbers, the strength in numbers of people. And, you know, our message is we're not going to back down from their attacks, and you know, we need to continue to play a lead role in, you know, bringing, you know, attention to these matters and bringing these movements together. I think you make a, you know, very strong point, and really making a concerted effort to do more to see if we can bring all of these different energies and movements together.
Okay, in the minute we got left, is there anywhere the listeners can go, you know, on your union's website or wherever, to find out more about the details of this decision and the union's position and what you propose to do about it? Is there any
sure. Yeah.
Site we can
we're go in? Yeah, there. One of the places that listeners can go is to our Facebook page. So if you look up SEIU1021.org, we are trying to update that constantly in regards to what's going on with the court case, what's going on with the actions that we're taking to, you know, prepare ourselves and to, you know, ensure that the education in regards to this is out there. And then also on our website, so SEIU1021, and that's SEIU1021.org. You can find that information there also.
Okay, Joe, thank you very much for coming on and discussing this critical issue here at the end of the show. And go 10 minutes. 10 minutes.
Rock.